now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't devour him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam show here once again on a Tuesday night for the wrestling audience to enjoy. We have another week of wrestling to recap and analyze, as well as the weekly flavor of the week topic. This week is the top 10 Intercontinental Champions, former Intercontinental Champions that were never world champions. So got a top 10, got a few honorable mentions as well. But the top 10 should be really fun to call in 347. 884-8452 to talk about that as I go through that top 10 as well as Raw, SmackDown, Impact Wrestling, and ROH as well. So we will be going on to that, and we also have our Raw correspondent Derek will be chiming in towards the end of the Raw analysis. So let's start with what we do every week, which is this week's news. We've got a few notable things here. Caitlin arrested last week, the SmackDown tapings. She was released on a $315 bond. It was because of a previous minor traffic violation in Michigan. It's reported that Dolph Ziggler has yet to cash in his Money in the Bank. The reason why it's delayed is because they feel that the feud with John Cena will kind of help propel him and kind of build some steam to actually be a legitimate world heavyweight champion. So, the feud with John Cena is pretty good, actually. I can't complain about that. I like it. I like the feud, and I think it's a good way to keep the concentration of the case off. Of course, you know, we get a little bit a lot of the WWE universe, a lot of wrestling fans get dissatisfied when another pay-per-view goes by without Dolph Ziggler cashing in the briefcase. But I can understand the logic in that, and I can't really dispute that much. And then lastly, Ric Flair ready to return to the WWE. He said that he's in, this stage of his life, he's in a really good shape and he's ready to keep it going. He's approaching his mid-60s now. I believe he's 63, if I'm not mistaken. I might be off a year or so, but I believe he's 63. But, you can't really do much. I mean, Jerry Lawler's in a lot better shape than he is as far as physically, just because, with the exception of the heart attack, of course. But, Lawler's in still good shape for his age. He's 61, I believe, and, he still wrestles in the indies. Before the heart attack, he still wrestled in the indies, at least twice a week. So, he kept up his shape and he was in good shape. He's wrestled around the same time frame as Ric Flair. But I don't see Ric Flair ever stepping foot into the WWE as far as a wrestling role, because that would just extinguish the whole, and it would just taint the whole retirement angle that he had with Shawn Michaels. I know he wrestled in Hulkamania tour a little bit after that match he had, the retirement match at WrestleMania, and then he started wrestling in TNA for a second, and that really ruined it. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. Managerial role would be the most fitting for Ric Flair at this stage of his career. On to our first trivia question. Log on to the chat room to answer, or tweet at Crave Wrestling. If you have any comments about this week's programming, call in 347-884-8452. The first trivia question of the night is, it's a relatively easy one, just to get you started. Who owned the American Wrestling Association? Who owned the American Wrestling Association? So, quite easy for the, I'm expecting the answer real soon here through chat or tweet at Crave Wrestling. Raw. Let's get to Raw here. Ryback defeats Titus O'Neil. The match actually wasn't that bad. I mean, it wasn't a squash. It wasn't relatively speaking, it wasn't a squash match. Titus O'Neil actually got some offense on Ryback. Titus O'Neil has been the talk of the town the past week regarding his Raw commentary. I wrote articles on both his Raw and his SmackDown commentary because as of the latest update, the SmackDown commentary wasn't as highly received as the Raw commentary, but we'll get into that when we get into the SmackDown talk. And Ryback waits in the ring for Punk in NXT 3, which later on in the show we found out what their name is officially. Security comes out and Vicky Guerrero as well. Ryback demands a TLC match with Punk at the next pay-per-view. Vicky Guerrero said, "You can get it, you know, if you leave the ring." And so that match is granted an official TLC match at the TLC pay-per-view between Ryback and CM Punk. You know, closer to the pay-per-view, we'll get into predictions there. But third week in a row that had something to do with third month in a row coming December that has to do something with Ryback and CM Punk. And it's sad because, I don't know, it just seems like ultimately Ryback is probably just a pawn in CM Punk's WWE winning streak, WWE title streak leading up to his Royal Rumble match versus The Rock. So it's you know, like I said, the only redemption that, because his momentum has stalled. I mean, it's sad. I'm still hanging on to Ryback because I like the, you know, I like the freshness of his character in regards to all the other main event faces. But how they're booking him now, I think, is just not good. I'm not a fan of it. Vern Gagne, absolutely. Great job. Next question is, what was the team of Jim Brunzell and Greg Gagne known as? What was their team name? Jim Brunzell, and Greg Gagne. And then we got Alberto Del Rio. We had a backstage segment leading to this match regarding Hornswoggle's spraying the flower onto Rosa Mendez, blah, blah, led to the match between Alberto Del Rio and Great Khali. One of two throwaway matches for me for this episode of Raw. Of course, Alberto Del Rio wins. I mean, you know, who thought that the Great Khali would beat Alberto Del Rio. That possibility was slim to preferably none. So, backstage segment between Vicky, Punk, and Heyman. Punk has to face the winner of the Raw Active Poll. The winner between Kane and Daniel Bryan. Michael Cole interview with Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, and Roman Reigns. Really good. Really good. Good impression. Good first impression on the mic. I mean, I'm familiar with Ambrose and Rollins or Tyler Black in the ROA and John Moxley in the Indies with Dean Ambrose. So I'm familiar with them, but vaguely familiar with Roman Reigns. I do know of his lineage of the Anoa'i family, I think that his mic work was suitable. He plays more of the enforcer, and he mentioned, you know, I say, you know, I talk when I want. I'm paraphrasing, of course. And Ambrose was a good leader to kind of navigate the mic work of the group. Rollins had a couple good lines in there as well, so it was good. But Ambrose is really the very, very, very crafty, kind of reminiscent of Jake the Snake Roberts in that aspect, as far as his mind for the business is concerned. That's the reason why he became so popular in the Indies. But it was good. It was good. I like the reference of this isn't the Nexus, you know. You know, this isn't the NWO. If you want to watch the NWO, if you want to see the NWO, buy the DVD. Good line there. So it was a good interview, and a good first impression. You know, verbally for the Shield is what they call themselves in the promo. The Shield, though, I mean, you know, I understand the reasoning behind it. They were saying that, you know, they're a shield of injustice. You know, CM Punk was champ for 365 days, and, you know, it's a popularity contest. Rollins made a reference to, and if it was Ryback, they would have protected him. I understand that. They admitted they didn't work directly for CM Punk, which I'm still skeptical about. So I understand the logic of the Shield name, but I don't know. You know, the Shield kind of sounds like some type of Avengers or, you know, Marvel comic, you know, group or something like that. So I'm not a big fan of the name. I mean, I can understand the logic, and it's not a terrible name, but I don't know. It doesn't. The Shield doesn't seem like some type. It doesn't seem like a heel stable. You know, it kind of sounds like some type of, you know, positive, some type of, you know, good vigilante or something like the good vigilante group. That I'm not too fond of the name. High Flyers, great job, absolutely. That is the name for Brunzill and Greg Gagne. Next trivia question. What name did Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty go by in the AWA? A few AWA trivia here. Next we get Tamina Snuka defeating Alicia Fox. Alicia Fox now plays a face. So, you know, she played a heel, you know, before, plays a face now. I saw that and I said, okay, typical WWE Divas division. I mean, you just switch from heel to face. I mean, it seems like her and Natalya, you know, does it all the time. You just switch from heel to face. I just don't understand it. It just doesn't make any sense at all. But, you know, she was a sacrificial lamb to Tamina Snuka, who was on her Vicky Guerrero protection push right now. I am definitely a fan of Tamina Snuka, and I'm happy that she's getting a push again. John Cena, AJ, Vicky Guerrero in-ring segments went a little long, a little redundant to me. It's just typical saga going between the two. For some reason, I think, you know, the TLC match will be a match between them two, Cena and Ziggler, 1-on-1. But for some reason, I got a feeling that we're going to see a tag match at the Royal Rumble between Cena and AJ against Dolph Ziggler and either Vicky Guerrero or Tamina Snuka. So, you know, I don't know how I feel about that concerning the Royal Rumble is concerned, but, you know, I think that it'd probably be some type of stipulation, you know, involving that. But I don't know. I don't know where this AJ thing is going. That would make the most sense, but still that wouldn't be highly endorsed by me, so we'll see where this goes. Vicky books a match between Cena and Ziggler later on in the show. I thought that was a good idea just to give them a feel, you know, just to give the audience a feel of the chemistry between the two. So I liked it. I think it was a good idea. I wish the finish wasn't clean. I mean, it was some interference, but it was a relative clean finish. So, yeah. Midnight Rockers. Great job. Looks like the chat room is doing quite well today. Chat room, log in for trivia or tweet at Crave Wrestling. The number to call is 347-884-8452. Next, we get Kofi Kingston defeating Tensai. Kofi Kingston, Tensai, and a match. Who do you think would have won? Kofi Kingston, of course. Tensai is just the epitome of a gimmick failure. Congratulations for getting that slammy. And yeah, I mean, this guy needs to be repackaged. I mean, you know, I wonder if, you know, the pay is probably better than when he was in Japan, but, I mean, just to humiliate yourself is a tough one. There's rumors that's been speculated that The Undertaker actually had a lot of stroke as far as bringing him back. But it's a tough one, though. I mean, he came in as Tensai, you know, defeated Cena, defeated Punk, and then went downhill from there. I don't know what it was. It seems like it was either one, just the Albert chance that he was getting every week, and, you know, it just bombing from that, or two, the unethical video that he had, you know, that was kind of a knock on, you know, Asians. So either one or both of those just caused the demise of Tensai. This guy is just useless now. So at the end, Wade Barrett, after Kofi won, I like the slingshot cross-body block that he did. That was pretty good. I mean, I've seen it before, but it was pretty good. Trouble in Paradise is a good move, but it seems like it takes a lot to execute. You got to turn around, and it's a lot. So there was one. I mean, it definitely earned my respect when it, you know, almost knocked The Miz out cold. I saw how potent it was then, but you just got to wait and turn around. It's kind of like a, you know, full turn, and not too big on that as a finisher. So we got Derek, our correspondent, on the line to give us this week's thoughts. What you got, sir?
Yeah, this is Crave Wrestling. Let's make some noise. This is the best wrestling program that's on air. Hey, I just got to tell you, as your Raw correspondent, NXT is pretty interesting. If they want to be called the Shield, like you said, the Avengers wannabe type of thing. But Ambrose, I see your Jake the Snake Roberts comparison. That's awesome. That's a good call. I didn't see that at first, but I've seen him in the Indies, and I've also saw him on Raw, and that's an awesome jump for him. So NXT is interesting and probably the best thing that ever happened to CM Punk. I've never been a CM Punk fan, but CM Punk, he needs support. He can't do anything on his own, so he needs Paul E. And honestly, Paul E will probably be Ryback's manager down the road because they've totally misused Ryback. I think his run is over. It's almost like Tensai. That's a bad comparison, but honestly, rival me on that. Ryback could have been in so much more, but he's been beaten, tarnished so many times now. It's kind of a joke. The AJ and Cena, it's kind of boring now, so the excitement is gone from that. Has been for a while, but for Raw, I'd say watch out for NXT. They're going to be out a lot more. And hopefully we see some good stuff from them and keep Raw interesting. That's what they're doing so far. At least it's helping CM Punk for whatever that's worth. And we'll see what happens next week on Raw.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Derek. Great correspondence there. Thank you for the acknowledgement of the Jake Roberts call there. I just like his, you know, the mic work. I noticed that it was a really good resemblance there. It's also a good call that may be the only way to salvage Ryback's, you know, run. Paul Heyman being his manager down the line. I don't want to see Ryback as a heel. You know, to me, it just seems like it just seems like it won't do well. He'll be one of the. I mean, like Derek said, I can really compare him to Tensai then. He'll probably get a little bitty push, and then eventually just become some type of jobber to the stars. So in that regard, you know, I just really hope that Ryback doesn't make a heel turn down the line, you know, in the near future. If his face run becomes extremely stale, I can understand, if he makes a turn then, but at the same time, I think that it can be salvaged. I think that his career can be salvaged. I think the Shield has, I mean, CM Punk, bro, Brad Maddox was the first one. And then eventually, you know, the Shield has came and done it too. I think that they're trying, it seems like they're trying to just kind of make Ryback still a dominant character by having, you know, screwy finishes and multiple person, you know, a stable come in, you know, and help and hurt them and attack them. But at the same time, it's one of them things. It's hurting him as well. And he was already, like I mentioned before in my shows, you know, he was already amongst a lot of skepticism, you know, with his character, and then he caught on, the Phoebe Moore caught on, but at the same time, it's like, you know, we got to do something. You know, at least give him some type of mid-level title, feed him with Cesaro or something like that. Even, you know, if Wade Barrett wins the Intercontinental title, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing a Ryback and Wade Barrett feud. So something needs to be done with Ryback really, really soon, or else he'll be another victim of the failed gimmick or failed push committee. The FPC, failed push committee. I like it. I might coin it. Next we have a Daniel Bryan and Kane backstage segment. Kane wins the poll, 59-41, but actually, according to #battle.com, Daniel Bryan actually won the poll. So, and there was tweets about it too. So that was really, really, really weird. So, but anyways, you know, we saw Kane go against CM Punk and Daniel Bryan go against Rey Mysterio. First time ever. I was, you know, I think Josh Matthews mentioned that when he interviewed, when he announced it to Daniel Bryan after the backstage segment. But it was a good match. I think that it could have went a little longer. I knew that they could have had some chemistry, just them two together. Just definitely oozed a potential great match. And it could have been a good feud. They both are, I mean, Bryan's a tweener right now, but, you know, I think that previously that could have been a really good feud. I don't see either one of them being a heel, a full-fledged heel anytime soon, or any type of singles champion to have a face-versus-face title match. But either way, I do want to see a match between Mysterio and Daniel Bryan again in the future, and maybe even a feud somehow. Backstage, we see Rosa Mendez and Alberto Del Rio flirt. I don't know what that's leading to. And then later we see Josh Matthews interviewing Dolph Ziggler. And then John Cena defeats Dolph Ziggler. Good match. But the thing is, he's still selling the knee, and he still defeats Ziggler. I don't think it should have been a pin finish. I think the finish should not have been clean. I think it, Ziggler should have beat Cena and had an advantage. He should have hit him with the briefcase, and he would have had an advantage because he didn't need a clean loss. I think that kind of took away some of the momentum. JBL really pushed Dolph Ziggler to the moon on SmackDown, saying, you know, it's one of his best weeks ever, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, but just really pushed Dolph Ziggler. And I think a clean pin by John Cena was not a good idea. Wasn't a fan of it. Speaking of non-clean finishes, the next match was Sheamus against Antonio Cesaro, and Sheamus wins by countout. I think that was a good idea. That match was my favorite match of the night, just because there were some good spots. A lot of people underestimate Sheamus. Sheamus can go. You know, he can go in the ring. He's criticized for not being a good wrestler, but I never noticed that. That wasn't something that I ever, you know, saw in Sheamus. You know, he has some good moves. I mean, he can put together a good match, and he showed it with Cesaro. And Cesaro has some really good spots. I really liked the torture rack slam that he did. And also like the counter that he did with the battering ram. He did the European uppercut. So that was really good. Sheamus bro kicks him, and he gets counted out. Yeah, I see something here in the in the chat room here. It says, the thing about Ryback, he said he was going to stay in the ring until CM Punk or NXT came out to face him. They didn't, and he left. Stone Cold and DX stayed ringside when they striked. Ryback walked. So, nice comparison to the Attitude Era compared to the PG era here. And then, like I was saying, you know, just as far as the Sheamus is concerned, he's a good wrestler, and that was a good call as far as the finish there. It was a count out, so it didn't really hurt Cesaro much. Big Show comes out after the match. Exchanges word with Sheamus. Sheamus did most of the talking, actually cut a little promo. Then Show eventually breaks the chair and walks away. It seems like he tried to punch through it, but it didn't work. So he just kind of just banged it on the ramp. And so I guess that was to intimidate Sheamus to set up the chairs match. Whoop-de-doo. Next we get the second throwaway match of the night for me. Damian Sandow defeats Zack Ryder. Zack Ryder made some type of tweet about that as far as, like, you know, him not being happy, you know, with his current position, but he mentioned that at least he was on Raw. And that's sad, you know. It's sad that a wrestler gets, I mean, it's good that he is on Raw. You know, that's a privilege in and of itself. He's not just on Superstars every week. But at the same time, I mean, you know, for him to be one of the most popular stars this time last year and, you know, just a year later, I mean, what a difference a year can make. I believe that I made an article about that earlier this year in the Bleacher Report, talking about pay-per-view to pay-per-view. What a difference a year can make. And this is just period. I mean, this guy is just jobber personified, just unpushed. This guy is just it's a real tough one, you know, to see Zack Ryder these days. And then finally, the main event was CM Punk defeating Kane. Kane being distracted by the Shield. Then Punk capitalizes, gets Kane to GTS. The Shield comes in the ring and attacks Kane. Well, it's kind of set up to, I mean, Punk kind of played that he may have been attacked, and the Shield attacks Kane. Daniel Bryan tries to make the save, but he gets jumped as well. And then Ryback comes out and gets the upper hand for a little bit, but only shortly. He's was about to powerbomb. I believe it was Rollins or Ambrose that he was about to powerbomb, because Roman Reigns speared him. And then they get the advantage on Ryback, and then they powerbomb him all together. And, CM Punk plays the innocent card like he doesn't have any affiliation. Similar to Brad Maddox, I don't know exactly how I feel about that. The fact that they don't have any affiliation. Derek said something really good. I will say this as a heel, as the slimy heel that he is now, he does need some backup for that. So I think that would be, you know, a good idea to align them with CM Punk. Not as a new Nexus type of thing, but, you know, because the thing is, the Shield is only going to, you know, we have to be real here. The Shield is just, I'm really happy that all three of them got called up from NXT. Worthy competitors to be called up. But, really, how long is this Shield gimmick going to last? So, might as well make the best out of it. A form of stretching the angle is to eventually revealed to be with CM Punk, but you can't go too far with that. Otherwise, the interest would be lost, similar to Aces and Eights and TNA. We'll get to that soon. All right, next question. What was Larry Zbyszko's nickname? Let's go on to SmackDown here. got Miz TV with John Cena as a guest, Vicky Guerrero. Well, AJ and Dolph Ziggler appears, and then Vicky Guerrero. More in the saga. You know, seems like we're going to get that just about every Raw and SmackDown. Ryback defeats Darren Young. Titus O'Neil was in commentary, and it was just not the same. I mean, you know, of course he had Darren Young, and he had, you know, two babyface commentators with Jerry Lawler and Michael Cole to kind of have that type of dynamic. But JBL, I mean, you know, he's a heel commentator for the most part, and, you know, just taking jabs to another heel was not that good. You know, it just wasn't, the chemistry wasn't the same. And then Josh Matthews, you know, he's by the book anyway, so, you know, it just wasn't that good. So I can't blame it all on Titus O'Neil, but you can definitely see that there was a lot more restrictions on SmackDown than Raw. So I would give him another chance. Check out my article on Bleacher Report about the update on his commentary, and vote for whether you believe if he should deserve another chance of commentary or not. And then after the end, Titus O'Neil blows the whistle at Ryback coming into the ring, and he gets shell-shocked. You know, I guess ultimately that led to the Raw match. R-Truth defeats Antonio Cesaro. Good call on that. I was a big fan. Didn't see R-Truth. Yeah, I mean, he didn't have a big role on Raw. And leading into the pay-per-view, I think he should have. But it was a good call for him to win on to beat Cesaro clean on SmackDown. Alberto Del Rio defeats Sin Cara. Just another Alberto Del Rio match. You know, for him to look good, really. Big Show defeats Kane and Daniel Bryan in a handicap match. Very interesting. Dissension between Kane and Daniel Bryan. Kane walks away for a second and gave Big Show enough time to capitalize on that and beat the tag team champion. So that's, I don't know how to take that, really. I mean, the tag team champions are defeated. Against the World Heavyweight Champion Big Show, that's cool, but I wouldn't have booked that match. I don't think that was a good idea. Kofi Kingston defeats Damian Sandow. That was a good idea, too. Wade Barrett cuts a promo, and then at the end of the match, he stands atop of the commentator's table. He was commentating the match, you know, throughout. So did a pretty good job. He actually is getting some good comments, getting some good tweets about his commentating. So he may get that role after he ends his wrestling career, because he's been doing pretty good. And then Dolph Ziggler defeats Randy Orton, rolls him up. Good match. Good call for Ziggler to get the match, and JBL just pushed that win to the moon. He really was talking about how good of a week Ziggler had, and yeah, it was a good idea for that to happen, and the fashion that it did, you know, it was a roll up, so it was kind of a dirty finish. Orton RKO's Ricardo Rodriguez after the match, and then stares down Alberto Del Rio, who's on the ring. And then Cena puts Ziggler in the attitude adjustment, not the attitude adjustment, but I'm sorry, the STF on top of the ramp. So not too bad a SmackDown. Actually a little better than, not all the way good, but a little better than what I've been seeing as of late. Looks like no responses. No correct responses yet for the what was Larry Zbyszko's nickname. Log on to the chat room for your answers, or tweet at Crave Wrestling. No correct tweets, no correct answers on the chat room as of now. Let's go to Impact Wrestling. Wes Briscoe gut check. He actually was the first good Czech wrestler to win. He defeats Garrett Bischoff. Joey Ryan calls out, well, this is open fight night, by the way. Joey Ryan calls out Chavo Guerrero, and Guerrero wins by DQ. Gets chokeslammed by Matt Morgan while he's celebrating on top of the, on the ropes. Sam Shaw calls out Alex Silva, and also this is the former gut check winners open fight night for them. So Sam Shaw calls out Alex Silva and defeats Alex Silva. I like Sam Shaw. It was a good match between the two. Silva's got a next. He's got a, you know, good type of heel feel to him, and so I think that Silva will do pretty good in the X division. Sam Shaw is a good wrestler. His gear, though, is not the best in the world. So the surfer dude gimmick is, or the skateboarder, whatever the gimmick is, not the best. Christian York calls out Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy defeats Christian York. Good match between the two. I'm real big on Christian York. I like him. I think that you know, it's a good deal to, you know, be wrestling. I think he said 16 years and not have much popularity. You know, he had some work. He did some work in ECW and TNA, like way back, like when TNA first started in 02, primarily teaming up with Joey Mercury. So, you know, it's good to see him back, and the match was good as well. Bobby Roode attacks York and Hardy, celebrates, leading into his match with Hardy at the next pay-per-view. Taylor Hendricks calls out Tara. Tara defeats Taylor Hendricks. Eric Young defeats Jesse and Robbie E. in the turkey suit match. Jesse gets pinned and forced to wear the suit. Aces and Eights attack Eric Young during the celebration. He was the one who got the dart thrown at. Kazarian calls out AJ Styles and loses to him. Austin Aries calls out Brick Hogan at the end. Shows evidence of relationship with Bully Ray. Then Hulk Hogan and Bully Ray come out, and Aries and Aries runs away from them. But Hogan kind of looks at Bully Ray and Hulk Hogan looks at Bully Ray and Brick Hogan kind of suspiciously and kind of inquisitively. So I don't know what that's leading to. Honestly, it's these love angles. I mean, they've got to go. I mean, you know, we got Claire Lynch, and then, you know, AJ was in love with everybody, and then now it's AJ and John Cena, and now it's potentially Bully Ray and Brick Hogan. I mean, come on. I mean, Days of Our Lives, you know, As the World Turns, you know, save that for primetime TV, I mean, or afternoon TV. But just, you know, I can see the point in it, you know, at times, but just, I mean, it's been an overkill. So I'm definitely not a fan of the big saga relationship angles. The Living Legend, Larry Zbyszko, Legend Larry Zbyszko. Next question. Who were the first male and female winners of Tough Enough? Who were the first male and female winners of Tough Enough? On to Ring of Honor. Good show. Good show for the Ring of Honor. We got Coleman and Alexander defeating the world's greatest tag team. The world's greatest tag team was going to, you know, if world's greatest tag team would have won, they would have been the number one contenders of the ROH tag team titles. But Coleman and Alexander won the match. Definitely a fan of that. I like Coleman Alexander is actually my favorite team in ROH. I just like the chemistry between the two. It's kind of like a mentor and protege, I believe. One is 35, one is 23, if I'm not mistaken, or something around that age. And so I like it a lot. We got Maven. Maven was the first male. Good, but the first female has yet to be said. Maven is the correct answer as far as the first male. The female went on to manage Jamie Noble. Kind of had, you know, manager slash girlfriend. He would say, me and Ma. And there's the answer. Kind of. Somebody said Lydia. Not quite. Almost. The last three letters is the correct part, but not the first. Coleman Alexander. Bobby Fish defeats Ryan McBride. Really anticlimactical ending. Yes, good job, Nidia. Me and my Nidia. Nidia, Nidia. Yes, absolutely. Bobby Fish. Yeah, they kind of pushed him, pumped him up a little bit. Two sport athlete, blah blah blah. Defeats Ryan McBride. He defeats him with a kick. And it was a bit weird, a bit anticlimactical. But we would go on to see, you know, why. And he cuts a promo too after the match about people who kind of helped him throughout the way. Eddie Edwards, Davey Richards, Kyle O'Reilly. And then we see a Davey Richards and Kyle O'Reilly face off. Davey cuts a promo saying he's trying to right wrongs with Eddie Edwards and Kyle O'Reilly. And Kyle O'Reilly comes out and Davey Richards talks about how, you know, he brought him in from Vancouver and he helped him, you know, he kind of hooked him up with his wife and blah, blah, blah. And Kyle O'Reilly does a terrible acting job as far as making amends. I mean, it had I'm going to remain a heel written all over it. But, you know, of course, some people may have bought into it, but I didn't. And so eventually, you know, they do the typical traditional hand raised, and then O'Reilly does a sweep, a leg sweep, and then quickly David Richards turns it into an ankle lock, and Bobby Fish comes out and actually helps O'Reilly. So Richards and O'Reilly is either a official tag team, no more team ambition, of course, or you know, they both have a common cause and to devour and destroy David Richards. So we'll see in the next in the upcoming episodes of ROH. And then the main event was Scum defeating Rhett Titus and BJ Whitmer. We saw some interference by the Wrestling's Greatest Tag Team during the match to help Scum win, and then after the match they attacked. They continued the attack. So, and that was the end of ROH. Interesting to see one of the advertised matches for next week's show involves the Headbangers. So, we will see the Headbangers wrestle next week. That should be pretty interesting to see. So, check out ROH television next week to see the Headbangers in action. So, I know they've been wrestling in the Indies for quite some time, but ever since their WCW run, I mean, I'm sorry, WWE run, they've just been pretty much an afterthought. Mosh, he stayed around for a little bit. He became Chaz and had a couple other gimmicks that didn't I think one of them was like a Beaver Cleaver type of gimmick that just bombed. So, but other than that, the Headbangers as a tag team, fairly popular in the late 90s, but not any time after that. So, next question before we go into our flavor of the week. Who were the natural disasters? Who were the natural disasters? All right, let's get into our flavor of the week topic, the top 10 Intercontinental Champions who were never world champions. Got three honorable mentions here. Jeff Jarrett, just because of his success in the USWA and the WCW and TNA, you know, I'll put him down as an honorable mention, but I didn't see him getting further than Intercontinental Champion in the WWE. Although, when he was feuding with Razor Ramon, he had a decent chance, and when he had the roadie and things like that, but you know, he was never a champion in WWE, so he was worth mentioning just because he had a successful career everywhere else. Ken Patera, the Olympian Ken Patera, definitely was very popular in the 70s and was Intercontinental Champion. And I definitely think that Ken Patera was a really good. He had a good gimmick. You know, he was managed by Bobby Heenan and played a really good heel. Became a face later in his career, and he ended his little. He was known for his blonde hair, but other than that, you know, he dyed his hair back to the brunette towards the latter part of his career and didn't do too well. Had an AWA stint in the late 80s as well. He actually teamed with Brad Renegans as well. But at the same time, you know, didn't do the best towards the latter parts of his WWE career. And but he was definitely very popular in the in the 70s. I actually had some good feuds with Bruno Sammartino in the mid 70s. So yeah, he won the Intercontinental title in 1980. So kudos to Ken Patera. And then Greg Valentine. I mean, he's like 10 and a half. I mean, he was a really good Intercontinental champion. Had a good feud with Tito Santana during the early 80s. And I definitely think that Valentine was a credible Intercontinental champion that, you know, could have had a short stint when he was with Jimmy Hart. So, yeah. Got a call here. State your name, where you're from, and let us know your thoughts.
My name's Scott. I'm from Springfield.
Hey,
and,
Scott.
I've been listening to your show tonight, and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat I saw mentioned on your website or your blog talk radio. And Ricky the Dragon Steamboat is probably the epitome of what makes wrestling great. He was an Intercontinental Champion, but he never made it to WWF Champion. And that's kind of a shame for what, as much as his exciting matches did. If you remember WrestleMania 3, probably the best match of all time. But you also mentioned Tito Santana. He probably wasn't WWF Champion caliber, but he was another great contender. But one that truly missed is Curt Hennig. The Mr. Perfect. He embodied wrestling. He could have been, if he was champion WWF when he wrestled Hulk Hogan, at the Royal Rumble, and if he just could have went on to be WWF champion, he would have really embodied what a great heel could have been instead of the Hulk Hogan praise and everything. So let's focus on that. And the Intercontinental Championship is held by so many great people that just did not get the chance to be WWF champion back in the 80s and 90s. So those are a few honorable mentions. You had a few. Ken Patera, I never really thought much of him, but you bring up some good points about that. Greg the Hammer Valentine. And so honorable mentions, that's great.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Scott, for your thoughts there. Absolutely. Great names. And they will be, all the names that he mentioned, other than the names that I just mentioned, will be in my top 10. So let's get to the top 10 quickly. Number 10, I said Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich. Just the, you know, he was the modern day warrior in the World Class Championship Wrestling. Very popular in the early 90s in the WWE. Was in the Ultimate, or the Ultimate Warriors Survivor Series tag team in 1990. He won the Intercontinental title. Had a good feud with Curt Hennig. And so I definitely think that Kerry Von Erich was definitely world title contender at that time. He was very popular, and Vince McMahon saw something in him from World Class and brought him up, and could have had a short stint there. Number nine, I say Tito Santana. Like I said, I had a good feud with Greg Valentine in the mid-'80s. And has some really good bouts for the Intercontinental title. He was never a world champion, but he definitely could have been a world champion contender. Actually, Santana lost the Intercontinental title to that's a little impromptu question. Typhoon and Earthquake is the correct answer for the natural disasters, but who did Tito Santana lose the Intercontinental title to? That's the impromptu trivia question for you. But yeah, Tito Santana was definitely a great personality in the WWE. Actually, that same Survivor Series match of 1990, he was the survivor of his team. So, Tito Santana was definitely a good wrestler. Number eight, I put Honky Tonk Man, longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time. I think that he could have had a short stint as a world champion just because of his Intercontinental title run being so long and then being so popular. You know, he could have had a short feud with Hogan at that time, maybe a sneaky win. Jimmy Hart being his manager helped him out a lot too, I wouldn't see him as a long champion. I just put him up there just because of his Intercontinental title length. Number seven, I put Razor Ramon, Scott Hall. Scott Hall is just an uncrowned champion all the way around. If I had another top 10 U.S. champions in the WCW that was never WCW world champions, which I may do in the near future, I would put Scott Hall up there too. I have yet to realize why Scott Hall never had a world title run. He just seemed like he was just right at the cusp, like, you know, and a few times. Actually won the World War III pay-per-view 1 year, and I think he had the won the World War III pay-per-view, ended up getting the title, world title match. I think it was Sting that year. But, you know, of course he didn't win, so... You know, NWO and Razor Ramon was incredibly popular, and, you know, I think he could have had a short world title stint. Number six is the British Bulldog. I mean, I mean, you know, Wembley Stadium, Bret Hart, Intercontinental title, you know, that was one of the best Intercontinental champion, and one of the best matches, one of the best Intercontinental title matches of all time, but, you know, even one of the best matches of all time, that was just an incredible match between the two. Very long, too, and it's just really heartfelt. Hometown crowd for British Bulldog, and when he was with Camp Cornette, you know, he had, you know, another, some other good runs. So, yeah, you know, it's cool. No problem at all. So I definitely think that British Bulldog was a good candidate, to be Intercontinental Champion. Without any problem, you know, without any dispute. Number five, I put Ricky Steamboat. Ricky Steamboat is actually my second best wrestler of all time. The reason why I put him as number five was because of, you know, him only having a, you know, a decent run in the WWE and only being world champion once in the WCW. I definitely think he could have been world. He should have been multi-time world champion, hands down. He's one of the best pure wrestlers in the history of professional wrestling. Amazing wrestler. I'm going to put him as five just because he wasn't as popular in the WWE. Number four, I have Owen Hart. Pretty self-explanatory. Owen Hart was a great Intercontinental champion, one of the uncrowned world champions. I mean, even to this day, people label Owen Hart as an uncrowned world champion, and I definitely am one of those people. So, you know, Owen Hart is one of the best. Number three, I have Ravishing Rick Rude. He did grow to have some fame and some success in the WCW. He was the WCW International World Heavyweight Champion. Had a good feud with Sting at the time, but in the WWE, he didn't get past Intercontinental Champion. But he had the good feuds. He had the feuds with Hogan. He had the feuds with Warrior. So I definitely think that Ravishing Rick Rude, especially, you know, being with Bobby Heenan, and of course Jake Roberts, had a feud with Ravishing Rick Rude, not Jake Roberts as Intercontinental Champion, who's never been world champion because Jake Roberts has never been Intercontinental Champion, which was very crazy, you know, which would be a topic, maybe a little, down the line. As far as wrestlers who's never won a title in the WWE, who definitely should have, and Jake Roberts would be one of the top people, but had a good feud with Rick Rude. Rick Rude definitely could have had a brief stint as a world champion back in the early 90s. Number two, I have Roddy Piper, another uncrowned champion, one of the best talkers of the business, won the Intercontinental Championship during a feud with Bret Hart, and I definitely think that Roddy Piper was an uncrowned world champion. I mean, in the 80s, the 90s, WCW, I mean, you know, Piper was and is the man, one of the best of all time, and I definitely think that the very fact that they didn't make him world champion any time of his career, both WWE and WCW, was kind of a bad call, because I think that Piper is one of the best, that ever stepped foot in the ring, not so much from a wrestling standpoint, but Piper is one of the most popular wrestlers of all time, so I definitely think that he should have had a world title stint. And my number one Intercontinental Champion who was never a world champion is, drumroll, Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. I definitely think that, you know, his wrestling prowess, his mic work. He actually had a feud with Hogan back in the day. And I definitely think that Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, could have and should have, at the peak of his career, been a world champion in the WWE. Went to the WCW and had a very mediocre run. They definitely think the transition to WCW, you know, with the kind of joining the Horsemen but denying it and not and rejecting the invitations to be a Horseman and kind of joining it and then turning on the Horsemen, you know, at the I think it was War Games, and he slammed the door on Ric Flair, and then you know he joins the NWO, and then the latter part of his career was just horrible. I mean, the West Texas Rednecks, and just that was just terrible. I think he came back in 02, I believe it was. I believe it was 02 that he came back to the WWE. He was in the Royal Rumble, actually had a pretty good run in that year's Royal Rumble. I believe he was like fourth place. So, yeah, I think it was maybe third or fourth place, because I think the last four was it was the year of Triple H won, if I'm not mistaken. It was like Triple H, Kurt Angle was the last two, and I think Austin and Perfect was the last four. I could be mistaken. Tweet at Crave Wrestling if I got the order wrong or if he wasn't in the top four, but I think Perfect was in the top four that year in the Royal Rumble. So it was a good way to kind of restore his career a little bit. Had a couple, and then after that, you know, had a couple of good matches, you know, right off the cusp of that Royal Rumble, successful, you know, Royal Rumble entry, but just really didn't work out. Got released, had some very bad moments at TNA, then eventually he passed, you know, he passed away. But yeah, Kurt Hennig, you know, the number one in my book, number one best Intercontinental Champion that was never World Champion in the WWE. Hope you enjoyed the list. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for joining Crave Wrestling Pancakes and Power Slams every Tuesday night from 11 p.m. Starting at 11 p.m. Continue to support Crave Wrestling. Follow Crave Wrestling on Facebook. Like Crave Wrestling on Facebook. Trivia, news, reports. Follow Crave Wrestling at Crave Wrestling on Twitter. Have any inquiries, have any Flavor of the Week topics that you would like to request. Have any article topics that you want to request for me to write on the Bleacher Report, send that to cravewrestling@gmail.com. And follow me on the Bleacher Report. I'm a feature columnist for the Bleacher Report, Chris Featherstone. Look me up, check out my articles. And thank you for so much for your support every week. Derek, the man, the Raw correspondent, great insight every week. Thank you so much for being on the Crave Wrestling staff. And thank you, listeners. You know, without you, you know, Pancakes and Power Slams wouldn't be where it is now. You know, thank you for the growth of listeners. You know, it's amazing. So thank you so much. Like I said, humbled by the numbers that I see as far as the listeners. But you know, if you're listening, you know, don't hesitate to call in. You know, I'll make some time for you. 347-884-8452. Let us know your raw thoughts. Let us know your you know, SmackDown, ROH, TNA. You know, we cover it all. The last the little trivia question, a little impromptu trivia question. I don't know if you all, anybody from the chat room or tweeting, forgot, but Randy Savage defeated Tito Santana for the Intercontinental title. So yeah, thank you all for listening and follow, support Crave Wrestling, support Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are here for you. Been doing it since April, approaching the 8th month of Pancakes and Power Slams. So thank you so much. And until next week, 347-884-8452 is the number to put in your back pocket. I will be here next week. Derek will be here next week. Until then, have a great week and enjoy your wrestling. God bless.